It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wickbright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show,
we've seen it every day in every courtroom that we go to, whether it's our case or observing other cases. When there's an attorney on one side and an attorney on the other, the odds are the unrepresented party is going to lose. Odds are much increased by that fact. And judges know that, lawyers know that, the court system knows that. The general public is oblivious to that fact.
John Whitfield, Executive Director of Blue Ridge Legal Services in Harrisonburg, Virginia, describes just how much better litigants do in court with a lawyer than without one, and what this means for equal justice. And in our weekly question and answer session, we'll find out about the protections available to victims of domestic violence and how to get those protections. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show was supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 119, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM Richmond Independent Radio and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's news you can use. Legislation to allow drivers with out-of-state car titles to take out a car title loan in Virginia passed the General Assembly last month. With the exception of Tennessee, all surrounding states have capped car title lending, calling it predatory. In West Virginia, car title lenders were charging 300 to 600% interest per year in violation of consumer protection laws, and the Attorney General's office sued and won, capping interest on car title loans at 18%. In Washington, D.C., lawsuits from the Attorney General's office led to settlements, and car title lenders returned both interest and cars to D.C. residents. D.C. also has refused to grant Virginia car title lenders the ability to repossess vehicles in the district, and West Virginia is considering taking similar action. Meanwhile, Maryland's Attorney General office is reviewing whether or not it is even legal for residents of that state to take their car titles across state lines. Under legislation passed in 2010, car title lenders in Virginia are allowed to charge interest anywhere between 236% and 268% per year. In other news, a federal rule issued last month strengthens protections for bank accounts used for a deposit of federal benefits and is welcome news for retirees, veterans, and disabled persons. The interim final rule, which takes effect on May 1st, will limit creditors' ability to freeze and take funds from accounts that contain Social Security, Supplemental Security Income, or SSI, VA, and other federal benefits. These benefits are intended to meet beneficiaries' daily needs, are critical to the survival of many recipients, and are legally protected from court garnishment orders. But, in practice, creditors frequently obtain court garnishment orders so that banks freeze accounts containing protected funds. A beneficiary may be unable to access urgently needed funds for weeks or months. Often, the paperwork and procedures needed to end an illegal freeze prove too daunting for a recipient, so that a bank turns over supposedly untouchable funds to a creditor. The new rule prohibits the practice of denying access to essential funds in bank accounts. It requires all banks to determine whether an account contains protected funds, and if so, the bank is required to protect 2 months of benefit payments from garnishment. With this week's News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's case that changed the Commonwealth is Division of Child Support Enforcement versus Skeens. Danny Skeens, a disabled worker, petitioned the circuit court to count the Social Security benefits paid to his children because of his disability against his child support arrearage. The court did so, and the Division of Child Support Enforcement appealed. In a 1994 decision, the Court of Appeals of Virginia held that Social Security disability benefits were not a disabled worker's earnings, but were a separate entitlement, and Social Security payments to his children due to his disability could be considered payments of support. The court concluded that whether the payments should be credited against a child support arrearage depended upon the circumstances of the case and rested in the sound discretion of the trial court, which did not abuse its discretion in crediting the Social Security benefits against back child support Mr. Skeens owed. This has been the law ever since. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Diane Dussault. And Division of Child Support Enforcement versus Skeens is this week's case that changed the Commonwealth.
We're here in the studio with this week's question and answer session. We have our questioner here. Would you tell us your name and where you're from?
Christy from Richmond.
Welcome to the show, Christy. What's your question for us this week?
I had a question on domestic violence.
Okay, go ahead.
The question is, what if the other person that put a charge on you started the violence?
Now, is this a criminal charge that the other person has put on you? Is it a civil, non-criminal case, or is it both? If you're not sure, that's fine.
Not sure.
Okay, that's fine. Well, I think that gives me enough information to answer, at least the civil, non-criminal side of it. In the criminal law, things are very much different. There, the state, the Commonwealth of Virginia, has to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the person who is charged with the crime, whether it's assault and battery or something of that nature, actually committed that crime. And I'm not going to deal with that because we don't deal with criminal law. We deal with civil law. And on the civil side, there's something called a protective order that anyone who feels that she or he is a victim or survivor of domestic violence can file a petition for a protective order. To get a protective order, there has to have been domestic violence, which is an injury or a reasonable threat of injury that would put you in reasonable fear of harm. Now, a judge who probably has not heard anything on the criminal side will hear the petition for a civil protective order. And here the standard is quite different. You simply have to prove by the greater weight of the evidence that there was some sort of injury or threat to injure that resulted in reasonable fear. So the mere fact that the other person has taken out a criminal warrant against you is pretty much meaningless. And the mere fact that the other person has also seeking a protective order against you is pretty much meaningless because each case gets judged on its own facts. Now, I have to sort of add a disclaimer here that if, in fact, the criminal case has already gone to trial and you have been found to have committed the criminal act that arose out of this domestic violence, you may have a problem there, because that's pretty much going to show that you were the aggressor or you were at fault. But if it's simply pending charges, then the judge may take that into account. But really, the judge wants to hear what happened and how it all started and how it all escalated and who said what and who did what. And although words alone are usually not enough to get a protective order, words coupled with any type of a threat, and certainly any type of a harmful or offensive touching, even if it's just, you know, holding someone against their will or shoving them, is enough to get a protective order. It does not have to be bruises or cuts or broken bones or anything like that. Any type of offensive or harmful touching would be enough to get a protective order. We are here at the Charlottesville office of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society, and we are speaking with John Whitfield, the Executive Director of Blue Ridge Legal Services in Harrisonburg, Virginia, and we are going to be talking today about the perils and pitfalls of pro se litigation, that is, litigation that people do without an attorney. Welcome to the show, John.
Oh, thanks for having me back on. It's a pleasure to be here.
Pleasure to have you. Now, John, you have presented information to all sorts of people, the Virginia Bar Association, the Supreme Court of Virginia, other places, about the problems that people face and when they go into court and they try to represent themselves. Give us the big overview, and then we'll delve into the details.
Well, both common sense and empirical, statistical, scientific data, if you will, show that lawyers hold the keys to the courthouse, and that without a lawyer, you're effectively locked out of our system of justice in most situations. That's why it's so critically important to our system of justice, to our sense of fairness, to our promise of equality under the law, that poor people who don't have the money for the necessities of life, including hiring an attorney when they need one, are provided an attorney so that they do have access to justice, because otherwise they're locked out of our system of justice. So yeah, a system of justice is actually designed as an adversarial system where you have trained advocates on both sides representing the opposing parties. That's the ideal scenario for our system of justice. It assumes that. And without an advocate on either side, the system is handicapped. Without an attorney on one side and an attorney on the other side, so it's a lopsided power, then you've really got a farce when it comes to trying to provide some sort of equal access to justice.
You're right. It is the key to access. So what happens to folks who don't have the key?
Well, common sense tells you that they're going to lose, that they're not going to be heard, that they're going to be at a disadvantage. And because of that disadvantage, the odds of them effectively presenting their case and therefore winning, which is the outcome of a case, is reduced significantly. We know that as lawyers. We've seen it every day in every courtroom that we go to, whether it's our case or observing other cases. When there's an attorney on one side, no attorney on the other, the odds are the unrepresented party is going to lose. The odds are much increased by that fact. And judges know that. Lawyers know that. The court system knows that. The general public is oblivious to that fact. Except common sense tells them when they have to go into that system, they know they're sunk without an attorney. And so they hire an attorney if they can afford one.
And I think anyone who would spend any time sitting in any general district courtroom anywhere in Virginia, any day of the week, would see that with their own eyes in a matter of an hour or less.
Exactly. But, you know, we know that. We know that from our eyes and experience and ears and just sitting in courtrooms. But a couple years ago, I started thinking there ought to be some statistical data that would show this. There ought to be. It's so easy to measure. And because we know from experience that's what happens, it would be nice to be able to see if that, you know, if the statistics bear that out. So I've been sort of on a quest for looking for that data, and I found actually that a professor of law in New England College of Law has been on that same quest and has written a number of law review articles and has compiled the results of such studies that have been conducted over the last four decades in different parts of the country, in different courts, in different areas of law. And so he's amassed this collection of studies showing the difference between people who are represented and their outcomes in the same kind of case versus people who are unrepresented in the same kind of case, and what the odds are aggregated of them winning or losing. And the results are dramatic, clear, unassailable. Unrepresented litigants lose way more often than when they're represented.
And can you quantify that? I mean, how dramatic is the difference? And this sounds like an enormous amount of data. And give us the highlights. Give us some of the more dramatic examples.
Okay. So there's been 8 different studies compiled on outcomes for tenants in landlord-tenant cases in various states over the various decades in recent history of what happens if what percentage of unrepresented tenants obtain favorable results in court versus what percentage of unrepresented tenants who obtain favorable results in court. So the only variable is whether they're represented or not. So in the first study, and this was in Brooklyn in 73, those who were represented obtained favorable results in over 30%, while those unrepresented, less than 20%. A significant difference of 10%, or almost double, actually. A second study in 1995, those who were represented won in 21%. Those who were unrepresented won in only 5%. The odds of losing increased fourfold without having an attorney. Another study, the tenant would win in 25 or 30% of the cases if they were represented. If they weren't represented, they'd win in only about 4%. Once again, a huge discrepancy. A fourth study, the tenants would win in almost 60% of the cases in that particular court at that particular time if they were represented. If they're unrepresented, less than 5%. So all 8 of the studies, while the difference, while the percentage of winning to losing may have varied in study by study, state by state, because the laws are different, the courts are different, but the theme was constant in all 8 of the studies that your odds of prevailing as a tenant were exponentially increased if you were represented, and if you're unrepresented, you had virtually no chance of winning.
So no matter when the study, no matter where the study, your odds of winning as a represented tenant were anywhere between 1.5 times as likely to 12 times as likely than somebody who didn't have a lawyer.
Yes.
Which is quite surprising. I mean, it's roof over your head is pretty much a basic human right. And one basically wonders how this plays out in other areas of law, like victims of domestic violence. Have there been studies about victims of domestic violence and how they fare?
Actually, there has been. So in one study of victims of domestic violence, if they were represented, they would have a favorable outcome in over 80% of their cases, while if they were unrepresented, they would win in only about 30%.
So more than 2.5 times as likely.
Yes. Yes, and here's the way to look at it, I think. Since our system is designed to have represented parties on both sides, and that's the model, that's where our system of law is most effective at reaching the correct outcome, if you will, the just outcome. So in 80%, when they're represented, that probably represents the just outcome. So domestic violence clients would, in a perfect system, win 80% of the time. If they're unrepresented, they're only going to win about 25% of the time, which means, if you will, the error rate of our court system for unrepresented litigants in domestic violence is over half, which means it's totally dysfunctional.
That's an absolutely wonderful way to put it. Very terrifying, but it's a very graphic way to put it. Well, I know recently there has been a movement, I don't know how recent it is, but recently a movement to try to expand a civil right to counsel, similar to the criminal right to counsel. What do we know about that, and how likely is that to happen?
Well, right now I think it's a pilot project in the state of California, and they're just gearing up to, they're putting out contracts, setting up those systems. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes over in California, in a number of jurisdictions in California. And of course, you know, California is always, 20 years before the rest of the country, 30 years before Virginia, I don't know, something like that. But I think people need to understand that our civil system of justice has a dirty little secret, and that is, if people aren't represented by counsel, the system doesn't work. It's not designed to work that way, and it doesn't work. And the error rate, if measured between those with represented and those unrepresented, shows that it's dysfunctional. And what we pride ourselves on, the rule of law. America is the shining beacon of the rule of law in the world. We go to other countries and lecture them about how important it is to foster the rule of law. And on the Supreme Court building is engraved in stone, equal justice under law. And when we say the Pledge of Allegiance, which is the closest thing we have to an American creed, a statement of our beliefs as Americans, we end with the words, with liberty and justice for all. That is bedrock of what America is. But there's this dirty little secret that for civil legal cases, people who can't afford an attorney are not getting access to justice, and that the rule of law really is dysfunctional in that situation. It's not the court's fault. It's not the judge's fault. It's not the litigant's fault. But poor people need to have access to justice, and that means lawyers in most cases, in order to have a fair day in court.
And on that note, we will conclude. We have been speaking with John Whitfield. He is the executive director of Blue Ridge Legal Services in Harrisonburg, Virginia. And we have been talking about the perils and pitfalls of pro se litigation without an attorney. Thank you very much, John, for being on the show.
Thank you, Marty.
This week's Strange But True Law is from Title 6.2, which deals with financial institutions and services. If you take out a loan in Virginia, usually you can't change your mind and cancel it. But it's different with a refund anticipation loan, which you agree to pay back with your income tax refund. Under Code of Virginia 6.2-2503, if you get a refund anticipation loan, you may rescind the loan on or before the close of the next business day, either by returning the check or by paying back the loan in cash. The lender can't charge a fee for this, unless it's for establishing and administering a bank account to electronically receive and distribute the refund. So, if you took out an ill-advised, high-interest refund anticipation loan to borrow your own money, you have until the close of the next business day to pay it back and cancel it. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Michelle King, and that's this week's Strange But True Law.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. If you have any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. In addition, every first-run Central Virginia Legal Aid radio show ever broadcast is now available at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the numeral 4, all.net. Then click the contributor link, then click Marty Wegbright, Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. Guardians and conservators are appointed to protect an incapacitated person who can't care for themselves or can't manage their own finances. Join us next Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. when our guest, private attorney Frank Feibelman, explains when a guardian is needed and the complicated process by which a court appoints one. That's Law for the Rest of Us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbright.